Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. If you plan to call in and speak with one of our hosts, please turn down your radio and separate yourself from any background noise and wait for the area code to be called on before you speak. And don't forget, Revolution Radio freedomslips.com is listener supported. So stop by the homepage, freedomslips.com. Visit the site support area to help support the host you're listening to's airtime. Thank you. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where the truth never sleeps.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Welcome one, welcome all, and it is that time for Roundtable Live here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Be rolling on until 4 a.m. in the morning Eastern Time. New ideas, different hosts every night, different subjects every night. You never know what's going to happen right here at the Roundtable Live. King Arthur has nothing on us. We're going round and round.
Welcome to Noreen Helpen's World at Heart Roundtable Show. This is Noreen Helpen. I'm broadcasting to you live from Southern California, where it is 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And on the schedule for Studio A, this show starts at 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. Revolution Radio is a listener support station, so please donate money. You can do that by, let me see here. I'll become a patron, donate with a donor box. I could do direct payment, and that's only in North America. Or you could send a snail mail to check a money order. Revolution Radio, address to staff member Terry Ackerman, and her address is on the very bottom of the page. Now, you guys, I need to do an audio check because I know I sound weird because I do have a cold. I'm coming down off the cold. I've had it for about 2 days now. So tell me how my audio is, if my cold is too, like, weird. That's why I have a whole bunch of videos lined up, you guys. Because I'm not going to talk as much tonight as normal. So let me see. Let me do an audio check, okay? There you go. Okay. And I must do my shout-outs to my friends, Bob, Mark, Josh Paul, Rudy, Harolyn, Star, and Darren Bean. Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, I think normally I would do a text message to people, but tonight I'm just like, oh. Ah, yes, thank you, Bob. Thank you, thank you. Yeah, that's, I don't know if that kind of has an effect on my show or not, the sniffles, but anyway, I don't always get a cold when it turns fall, and I live here in SoCal, so a lot of people say, well, you don't really have a true fall. That's kind of true. Sometimes I do get a cold around this time, but not always, but this year, yeah, so there you go. Last year, I don't think I did. Yeah, so anyway, let me see here. Yeah, you guys, because I'm not going to talk as much, I'm going to give you a lot of good content audio-wise. So, let's see here. Ah, okay. Do you guys remember the days of going to nightclubs? Or not? I kind of do, because I did some of that. Because back in the day, that was a way to socialize and meet people. Or even meet a date. Or a boyfriend, girlfriend, even a spouse. Because some people have. I know people now might find it hard to believe, but I do know people who met their spouses in a club. Oh, thank you, thank you. Anyway, that's okay. There are people who have met their spouses in a club. That is true. That is absolutely the truth. That is really happens. Okay? But nowadays, I think we all know because of the cell phone. Mainly, it is a cell phone that has destroyed part of socialization and the nightclub scene. Yeah, you can imagine that, right? So here's a whole bunch of videos from different parts of the world where they talk about how social media has killed the nightclub scene. Here we go.
And a question tonight. Is the fun nature of the nightclub scene dying out? Some people have been complaining about how much the culture of the club has changed in the past few years. Instead of dancing, people have their eyes glued to their damn cell phones and posting on social media. And we can't forget to mention the cost after paying for parking, entry, and then a section that's at private area with your little bottles. Some just aren't in a party mood anymore. We have beverage
Now, see, you guys, right there, okay, not just, it is a cell phone that killed us, to be honest, but also the rising prices of everything, okay? So back in the day, all you needed to do was drive there with or without other people. Parking, I would say, if a place was very popular, yeah, harder. And a lot of times people would do valet parking because of that. But it was not out of the question to find a parking spot with very little cost. And the entry fees, that could vary. Sometimes you get in free, sometimes not. And you did not have to get a section. You could. Not everybody did. And people dance. So very different, yeah.
Director and consultant Bevan Biggers, owner of bars and nightclubs, Sean Outlaw, and an occasional club goer, Rico Davis. So, Rico, how has a club, in your opinion, from your perspective, lost its appeal?
I believe the parking first, because you're looking at paying almost $40 to $50 if you do valet parking. Mm-hmm. And just to get to the door, you're looking at sometimes $20, maybe $30. So you're looking at $80 just before you even get in the door.
Okay, you guys, $20 to $30 to get in. Back when I used to go, it was 5, 10, maybe 20 tops. And a lot of times women got them for free. So this thing about a $50 cover charge was kind of rare. But I guess a little more common now.
Right. And it's not fun anymore when you have to spend so much money to have a good time.
So yours is more on the financial aspect rather than people who are inside on their cell phones, not paying attention, not even socializing.
No one dances anymore.
Right.
You would see someone in a club and they're just literally on their phone the whole time. If you sit there, sometimes I like to do a lot of people watch. Mm-hmm. I would actually sit there and watch someone on their phone that long. It's like, it's no fun. I mean, you know, me growing up, we go out to dance, to have a good time. But if your face is glued to the phone, what kind of fun is that?
Mm-hmm. Sean, your perspective as an owner out there, do you see many people not enjoying themselves, or you let the millennials and the Gen Zers just stay on their phones as long as they're spending that money with you?
Yeah, I mean, we work pretty hard for people to have a good time. Uh-huh. We make sure that whether it's the music, the MC, the host, or maybe a guest we might bring on, they do a lot of twerking. Now, I don't know if you call that dancing, but there's a lot of twerking going on. But yeah, no, the people are on their phones a lot. A lot of times they're showing what they're doing.
Or right,
what
instead of doing.
You guys, this is so, like, cheap to me, right? Seriously, like, cheap, right? You go and you pay to get in a club, and all you're doing is, like, on the phone stuff. That's BS.
Instead of doing it. Yeah. They're not living in the moment, and I see that. But at the same time, I mean, you know, if you want to be on your phone and buy drinks, then I guess that's your business.
And that's an important aspect, Bevan, that people want to...
That's another thing. The drinks nowadays have to be out of control in terms of their price. And they're probably not even... Look, I'm not a big alcohol person per se, but you're probably not even getting a strong drink, which for me may be okay. But if you really want to hit it and get a strong drink, imagine, right? I mean, my goodness. Wow. Imagine you go to a club and you get like this mealy drink for a high price is what I'm guessing.
Show social media what they're doing, but they're not actually
it. Because sometimes when I go out, they'll be on their phones, and the only time they dance is if somebody has a camera in their face like, hey, girl. Ooh. And then right when the camera's done, back on the phone, I'm like, what is going on? Me, I'm definitely a dance person, so that's why I'm like at the flat a lot, because people come in there specifically to dance and drink and dance. Like, mm-hmm. I'm coming there to sweat. But it's really hard for me to enjoy myself. I'm not a section person. I'm not going to get a bottle. I just want a few drinks, and I just want to dance.
And our place is like...
And let me say something. What she just said, okay, you guys, for one thing, okay? I'm not like one of these nightclubber type people, even though I did do that back in the day or whatever. But I'm just making a commentary on it because I have some experience with it. What she's saying would be your average person's experience back in the day. Like how she said, just a few bottles, just to loosen yourself up, go out and dance. That is the average experience. But they're trying to make this whole thing like super uber high priced.
Like a flat, fewer and far in between now.
Very few and far in between. But there is like a house movement going on. So there's a lot of like private
house party?
No, like house music party scene where people are coming out specifically to dance. And it's usually house music. That's usually the scene where we're dancing the most. Everything else is twerking periodically for the camera, for your phone. So, yeah, I'm just not enjoying myself if I can't dance.
And so, Rico.
Okay, but you guys, twerking, right? Back in the day when Sir Mix-a-Lot came out with, you know, Big Butt song and all that, people did a different form of twerking. Or Boogie in the Butt. Remember that one where people would do the grinding? So that is kind of like a more milder form of twerking. So that was going on back in the day. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I think the worst thing now is the cell phones and the outrageous prices.
Coco, have you said, you know what, this is not for me. I might as well stay home.
Yes.
Or do you go to house party? What's your alternative?
My alternative is either like a lounge. Mm-hmm. Someplace really where you're not going to dance. So you just really go there to socialize and network. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say,
I would agree with him. That might be a slightly better experience, like a lounge that kind of specializes in something, whether you're into cigars, certain kinds of drinks, or certain kinds of hobbies. Yeah, that might be better.
Had to put together a party. It was one of those requirements where you have to leave your cell phone in the car. And I asked people, I was like, would you be interested? And a lot of people said, you know what, I would go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be great because now people really get to dance and talk and, you know, communication, because with cell phones now, there's no communications at all.
And Sean, you said you're hiring more entertainment at your spots. Do you think that will draw people out, or is that even you sounded like you're satisfied with it as long as they keep spending that money?
Yeah, I mean, no, but I think that we spend a lot of effort into making sure our customers have a good time. And we do get special guests, musicians, artists, or people on TV shows and things like that. And people do want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, to your point, they're filming them in the background
because
they're in the same place. So it's kind of funny.
Plus, it costs this club owner more to hire these, quote, famous or semi-famous people, right? And that's going to make it why the entry fee itself is high.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I mean, I would say, though, you know, in terms of it being expensive to go out, right, there was some complaints about, well, it's getting kind of high to go out.
Uh-huh.
There is. But I think if you were to go to the store, buy a bottle of liquor, buy all the mixers, get a DJ to come to your house, get a bunch of waitresses to bring you everything you need, get a bartender to make all your drinks, and then get someone to clean it all up at the end of the night, I think you'll spend more than you would at a night out. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. It's all
the
phone.
I'm going to drink an Uber. I like to Uber, so I don't have a parking complaint because I'm going to Uber to the establishment anyways.
Uh-huh.
And what I would say, if the customer service is great, the money's not a problem.
We want to thank you guys for joining us.
Okay, you guys, I had to crank up the volume on that super high. First, I had to go up to 100 on my volume meter because for some reason, this is a Fox Houston video too, but the volume was super low. Anyway, so here on Revolution Radio, as you guys know, me as a host, I cover a plethora of topics, obviously, right? Because who's going to go from Israel and Hamas to depopulation to the jab and COVID to nightclub talk, right? Just me. I'm just kidding. But anyway, just showed you the variety of things that we could do on this station. Let me see if I can find one more nightclub video. Maybe some of these go a little bit more into... Yeah, okay, this will be my last one on this. This one might go a little bit, a little deeper on it. Let's see.
The club is dead.
Yes, it is. It's been a long time coming, but I think we're finally seeing the club, at least the club scene, as we know it today, starting to go by the wayside.
It's over, man. We're going to show you a clip from Houston talking about the end of the club era. And we're going to talk about the reasons why we think this demise, the writing's been on the walls. Let's check it out.
And a question tonight, is the fun nature of the nightclub scene dying out? Some people have been complaining about how much the culture of the club has changed in the past few years. Instead of dancing, people have their eyes glued to their damn cell phones and posting
okay,
on
guys,
social
I'm gonna
media.
Speed up this
and we can't forget to mention
television. A national television has a spot saying the club is dead, okay? So high alert. What's your thoughts?
That's a big problem.
Okay, you guys, I'm reading the comments on here, and I think this is really says it all, too. This person says, phone, social media. Okay, wait. Okay, this one, no. This person says, I think some people are afraid to actually get loose and just have fun for fear of being recorded on someone's Instagram or Snapchat story. Yep. Without being judged, clown, LOL. Yep. See? Yeah. Okay. Huh, wow. See, it affects concert going, too. So, you now understand that when I said back in the day there were people that met their spouses at clubs, that stuff is real and really happened, okay? Well, why? Because people danced, they weren't on their phone. So, yeah, you could actually talk to people, get to know them, date them, and marry them possibly. But that's going to be so much lower in percentage now because of all this.
Problem when it's coming from one of the big club cities in the whole nation, Houston. I mean, H-Town is known for the club scene.
Houston's hot.
So if probably one of the hottest club scenes in the whole country is saying the club era is dead, that should be like an alarm for the rest of the country, right? So I lived in Houston for about 12 years, you know, started off college out there. So I saw it all, like, I saw the start. Mm-hmm. Of the demise and kind of where things are right now. And, I mean, I would like to say I'm surprised, but I'm not. Because, I mean, just like you said, the writing has been on the wall for a while. I mean, with the introduction and the popularity of sections and the exclusive sections and then...
Yeah, you guys, sorry. But even if you bring your cell phone into a club, why do you have to insist or really, really want to have a section? When we went, we weren't hyper-focused on sections. See, this is what I mean. It's so weird.
You know, having groups and, you know, all that is just kind of played into kind of what we see right now with the demise of the club scene. It's not really fun no more to go out, you know, because it's like, before you even get in the door, look how much money you're spending. You know, you're probably spending like, what, 25, 30 if you're lucky on parking. And then you got to pay some entry fee when you get to the door. I mean, and that's before you even get to pay.
See what I mean? They're trying to rake us, right? Because I am telling you, and those who experienced this back in the day, right, you didn't really have to pay for, I mean, you did pay for parking sometimes. But not every time. Okay, and you didn't have to like pay $20 to $50 to get in all the time once in a while. And you didn't have to have a section. It's just so different.
Paying for a section. So yeah, okay. I could definitely see why it's dead.
So I don't want to sound like an old head here, but I remember that when I used to go to the club, the intention of going to the club was dancing. You know, I would go to a club and I would dance, you know, with 30 plus girls. You know, me and my friends would be or turned up in a section, not in a section, like that's before sections. I mean, like in a section, like a part of the room, we would be turned up. We would be dancing, jumping around, doing the latest dances. And I don't feel
doing
like
doing the stanky leg.
Doing the stanky leg, dang. We
doing the the swag surf.
Laffy taffy, party like a rock star. I mean, juking.
Doing the Dougie.
Man, it was fun. It was lit.
Those are some good days.
And I did it with like $15. I did.
See what I mean? Now they have to make money off of everything they can.
It was like $15, $20 max, and you could go crazy. Go crazy. So, speaking of old heads, let's run this clip of what the true old head has to say about his experience at the club now.
I believe the parking first, because you're looking at paying almost $40 to $50 if you do valet parking.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get to the door, you're looking at sometimes $20, maybe $30. So you're looking at $80 just before you even get in the door.
Right.
And it's not fun anymore when you have to spend so much money to have a good time.
So yours is more on the financial aspect rather than people who are inside on their cell phones, not paying attention, not even socializing.
No one dances anymore.
Right.
You would see someone in a club and they're just literally on their phone.
Because like when you go out to the clubs now, it's like if a chick is dancing, you really don't see her dancing with.
She's twerking.
With a nigga. Yeah, exactly. She's twerking for the gram.
You got no chance.
On IG Live.
Get behind it if you want to. Try, my boy. Try. What's going to happen?
You might get slapped low-key. So, not real talk, though. You know, when you see chicks dancing now, they're not really just dancing, like, with a dude no more. They're dancing with their homegirls, you know, or just dancing and be like, yeah, girl, make that ass clap. You know, they're just twerking for the gram. So, it's not really dancing, like they're not really dancing out to have fun. Remember, like we used to wait for certain songs to come on so we could get up behind.
That was a dancing song.
That was like a dancing song.
You knew, like, what was it? Man, Back That Thing Up.
Oh, that was like the number one.
Juvenile,
that was number one.
Oh my god, there's this funny video excerpt where they're showing this. Now these people aren't dressed that badly. The girl's shorts are a little bit short, but she's sort of doing like a twerking. I don't know what these terms are for the new dances, okay, but she's sort of semi-twerking with a guy in front of a McDonald's sign. Yeah. That should be the new, this should be a new McDonald's ad. And lo and behold, predictive programming. It probably friggin' will be.
At 14 seconds, we counted the seconds before the beat dropped, so you knew, because you know it was a dancing song. Anybody you got behind?
There used to be different songs that used to come on that would, like, you know, basically, when you heard that song, you'll go find the girl you've been eyeing in the club all night. You know, you go see her real quick, you know what I mean? Pull her up like, hey, what you talking about, little mama?
For
you know
real,
what I'm saying?
Man.
And then you get that little dance on. And usually, if you dance with her, you know, back-to-back songs, you know what I'm saying? You could possibly, that usually used to lead to, like, getting her number. But mm-hmm. It's not like that no more because, one, you're not dancing with nobody no more. And if you, like, even come up on a chick like that like you used to back in the day, you might get pepper sprayed. She might call you a creeper. You might be getting thrown out the club.
Right. She might actually look at you funny. And you got to understand, like, you put in a lot of thought to get to the club, like OG was saying, right? Man's probably spent $100 before he even got to the door.
Right.
Man, I spent $100 just to get through the door, and I ain't get nothing out of this. That's what people are saying, right?
And while it might not be the same for women, how they just might show up, but like, hey, bro, I ain't dropping $100 just to stand around and not do nothing like OG, man. OG want to get his money's worth.
Right. And something that, that is not really touched up on is just what the sections have really done within the club. Like, the sections has basically taken away any kind of standing room that you typically would have.
Yeah, sections, what it does in this context to me, it just makes it less sociable, right? I think a section works better when you go to a concert. I can understand that. But for a club, it almost defeats the purpose, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. In the club before. Because before, the way it used to be was you had a bar, you had an open dance area, and then you probably have, like, on the outskirts, sections have always been there.
Right,
it's not
right.
Like we're saying, like, sections is, like, a new thing. Sections have always been there, but it's, like, sections now have basically encroached in all the available standing space.
Exactly.
There's literally no more standing space, no more. So now...
I think a club owner, and this is not about me having too much sympathy for them one way or the other, okay? But as a club owner, it's got to be sort of disheartening. I mean, if you have a popular club and you actually get people to come in, spend money, then you're doing okay, right? But, I mean, with all these factors, it's almost like, wow, it's so bizarre.
I was like, you look like a chump if you're over there standing with a drink in your hand and then you see all the girls twerking around in all the sections around you. And plus, the chicks that right now, they're not even trying to talk to you if they don't have a section to come back to. So you got to be able to offer a chick a section to come back to come stand in, to come sit down in.
Yeah, that's too much money for something that you can't even really bank on. Like, if the goal here, as they're talking about, would be, say, meeting the opposite sex, it doesn't sound like a very good investment.
And a hookah to smoke, a bottle. I mean, these
just for the opportunity. You said the prerequisites.
Just to even get a chance.
And that's the thing, too. Like, you made a great point because... like, we don't mind. I'm sure the old head, he don't mind paying for a section, right? He don't mind doing that, but there's no returns on it. Like, it has encroached on the dance floor. He can't even have a good time. It's not social anymore,
right?
Those sections are creating barriers because there's no one on the dance floor to mingle. Everyone is in the section turning up and not interacting. They're turning up for the gram. They're turning up
exactly.
for other people, but they're not in the club.
They're not really living in the moment. And that's the thing, too. It's like when you basically what you've done is like you basically partitioned everybody off into this mm-hmm. little box. And then you probably will have like maybe 3-4 guys in a section with about like maybe 10 girls in the section. Like half of them are doing this on their phone, you know what I'm saying? The other half are probably twerking with themselves.
Mm-hmm. And we got data to prove it, right? So
exactly.
We got a clip. We got a clip.
An important aspect, Bevan, that people...
still wants the vibes.
She still wants to dance. And that's actually rare to actually hear that because you just don't see that that often. It's almost like such a foreign thing now. There's like, it's I even forget chicks even want to dance anymore.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny.
I just don't see it at all. So, no, I definitely see what she's talking about. This basically pretentious attitude a lot of people have, like when they go out, it's like they're pretending to have fun, but they're not really having fun. They're acting like they're having this blast, you know. You see it on stories all the time on IG. You know, everyone is like all living that life, you know, like singing along to the song and vibing and everything like that. But the truth is, just like she said, it's all for the camera. Exactly, because as soon as that camera, as soon as that flashlight goes off, as soon as your little mini ring light that connect to the phone goes off, then it's like back to just. Oh shit! Okay, who am I going to tag in it? How am I going to edit it? What filter am I going to put? And how many likes have I gotten, or how many views have I gotten within the last like 20 minutes? Like,
so you missed 3 songs editing the 15-second clip of you pretending to have fun.
Exactly. So that's why people are not really even engaged when they even do go out anymore because they're just
right because they're so busy trying to make the perfect video. Look. I can understand maybe once in a while you want to do that just for something to share, right? But not all the time.
So worried about what's going on in their phones that they're not even living in the moment. And it's like, nah, she's right. It's almost like people are living within their own individual bubbles. It's like, it's crazy.
This is crazy. But, you know, we got to realize that the club has typically been for the younger generations. And sad to say, just like with music, like the younger generations dictate really the protocol of the club.
Okay, you guys, understand some of you may not be into this topic, and that's fine. I don't know. I haven't really gotten any feedback from anybody one way or the other. But I think, to me, even this topic is sort of reflective of what's going on in society in general. So whether you are a fan of clubs or not, just the fact that they're talking about these factors is part of our life now. That I do find very interesting. Even though I am an ex, well, I don't want to say ex-clubber, but someone who did that at one time. But it, even if I didn't, I would find this commentary very interesting, the observations.
Club. And what you got to realize in this day and age at the club is social media runs it. Like, they're not here for you. The girls that are dancing, they're not here for you. They didn't come here to meet a guy. They came to dance with their friends. Have a
That's
good
what
time.
It used to be.
Boy, you telling me. But that's not what it is anymore, right? They want to have a good time, post on social media, sing along, look like they're having fun. And then after, when they go home the next day, they want to reap all the rewards and the events of people messaging them, saying that where they were, having a good time, all the different responses they'll get from that. And we got to, you know, what's the alternatives, right? We got to set better expectations, bro. Because that thing, the club that we know is dead.
Exactly. And that kind of shows enough.
And you guys, these two people talking here, I know you can't see them, but they don't even look that old. Okay. So when they talking like this is like way back in the day, yes and no. I mean, you know, I don't know how old they are. I'm going to guess they're maybe 40. Whatever, but they don't even look that old, okay? So it is interesting.
Another angle of what, like, social media has really kind of done to just the going out experience, you know? It's like people are, like, they're not really enjoying themselves. They're just showing this image like they are, but they're really not. And it's like, what is the alternative? I mean, where else are you going to go if you're trying to turn up? Something similar to what we used to have in the past. And I just don't see that shit coming back. Because if you do have some shit like that, all they're going to do is come out with their phones and be recording anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if you have like a 2000s night or a 90s night.
And so I've been thinking about this a lot. And I do have solutions, but this not might be what you want to hear. You have to travel. Okay, these events, these parties, they still exist, right? They're still events and themes, parties that still are lit and still go down and still are fun and turned up, like Caribbean parties, like Trinidad Carnival. You want to go to Colombia, Cartagena. You want to go to Mexico in these crazy tourist locations because you're spending $1,000, $700. Me personally, I've spent $2,000 in a club before in one night.
Whoa! $2,000? Well, you know what, though? If he is a person who is, like, what do you call it? I don't know. A social reporter, entertainment reporter / journalist, and he has to review a club. I get it. Yeah, that might be why. Okay.
You're spending life event money in the club. You can just abstain from going to the club and go to different events with your friends where this is still going down. Those concerts, those weekend-long concerts like Rolling Loud or different.
Lollapalooza. What was the other one? Woodfest or Coachella.
Where people come there to be in the moment, right? Live events.
Right.
Also, now, we love the club because it's the only place where 10 of your homeboys can go and drink and stand around and do nothing. I got it. But that's not the MO anymore. You have to set your expectations. Like, okay, go there and drink, but you have to spread out. Axe throwing, pool bars, you know, golf.
Sports bars.
Throw anything. Just drink liquor in other places. Like, you know.
Go to a wine bar. Shit.
Something. Do something, bro.
Go to a winery. Go to a distillery.
Okay, enough of this. It's interesting, but okay. Let me see here. Hey, y'all. Who's all listening to this? And I know some of you listening have had experiences in clubs, right? It ain't just me. So, you know, I am practically done with this topic, but I'm telling you, I think most of you could relate to what these people are saying, right? That the club scene, because of social media and high prices of everything, right, has changed the experience. Really? Like, here's another thing, you guys. It's interesting socially, right? Because of the situation at a club, the way clubs are, I don't even see back in the day, right? A boyfriend and girlfriend, well, wearing a trans LGBTQ thing nowadays. So whoever your partner is, okay, whatever their gender, but your partner or your spouse. Back in the day when clubs were more popular, okay, you didn't have all this weirdness, right? I think that, and what is weird, you guys, seriously? You may have had more of a reason to be a little fearful. Why? Because, oh, okay. The reason why I think you had more reason to be fearful in those days is because your spouse or your partner, if you get in a fight, okay, if they're bored with you or you get in a fight or something's up, okay, they might say, oh, I'm going out to the market. But in reality, they might go to a club, right? And they might pick up on somebody and have sex with that person. Because I'm telling you, this is, look, you guys, I'm being objective here. Where's my water? I am really thirsty. I'm being very objective, okay? Seriously objective. Because there's good and bad with all this. Because back in those days, there was a higher chance, whether you think this is good or not. Okay, hold on. God, was I thirsty. Anyway, whether our judgments on this, just this is what it was. There might have been a chance that your significant other, if they went to a club to take off and do that, they might have gotten laid behind your back. And I'm not talking like getting a hotel and spending a whole night with someone. I'm talking about like they run out, go to a club. Let's say they're like 2 miles away from a club. And that club has people in it. And in those days, okay, unlike nowadays, and I'm not saying this doesn't happen now. I think it happens less for the reasons formerly stated earlier. Okay, less socializing. But in those days, because there was more socializing, there were more, I would say, one-night stands. And they didn't even have to be one night. I've heard stories in the past where this kind of scenario, where a couple would get into an argument or something, and the partner would go to a club, and they would, like, drink, okay, which happens often, right, at a club. And maybe, let's say it's a guy, it's your spouse, and he's drinking in a club, and there's a female who's also drinking, right? Get it? Then what? He's pissed at you or whatever it is, so whatever the reason. So he kind of hints to this girl, hey, let's go to my car. And whether it's because she's drinking or not, I'm just saying what it is. Okay, she goes with him, and they either mess around or have sex in the car. His car, her car, whatever. Maybe even in the back of the nightclub. Who knows? Okay? And then they may or may not exchange numbers, but the point is that within 2 hours, he's home. Or less than that. He's home. Okay, I'm back. Yeah, I did forget to get something at the market. Just kidding. Okay, so you see my point, okay? Now think about it. I just described a very quick encounter. But think of it in a longer term. There were people back then that planned this ahead of time. Like they would say to their significant other, hey, I'm going to a club this weekend with fill in the blank. Jane, Joe, whatever. And I'll be back in 2 hours. And then they go, and they actually are hooking up with someone they met from another time. Maybe it was this woman or man that I just explained to you earlier. But this time, there's more plans, quote, behind it. I'm not making a judgment. I'm just saying that this has pros and cons to it. You would be more, what do you call it? Ah, yeah, cheaters. Thank you, Josh. Cheaters. Exactly. The only thing, though, about that show is it didn't always revolve around the club scene, but I think some of it did. But that's why I was addressing the more planned out, quote, cheating scenarios, right? But I am including the club because, like I say, the clubs then and now are so different that now this is the irony, right? Despite the sexy clothes and the twerking that women are doing, maybe there's just less sex involved in the real sense, right? right? It's more for show. It's more for your Instagram, right? Than it is to actually hook up, whether people believe in hookups or one-nighters or whatever. I'm just saying, okay? So in the old days, you were less likely, they didn't have social media then, so you could, you wouldn't even plant your face or your dancing or your friends on Instagram or something in a club. That didn't happen in that way, okay? Once in a while, people might take actual cameras and take actual pictures, but that's very different, okay? And so the bottom line is that people were able to cheat more vis-a-vis through the club scene, okay? Now, whether or not they would get caught with this situation or whether they wouldn't be or whether it would lead to a divorce or not is a little separate. That's a separate topic. But I'm just telling you that for better or worse, that was a little more likely to happen than now. So it's really interesting to kind of review, like, you know, I don't know, the whole thing. It's really, to me, very interesting, actually. You know, I don't know. Just the whole evolvement of it, you know, the whole thing. It's changed that much, right? I mean, within, like, what, 2 decades, right? I mean, think about that. That's the most interesting thing to me, that it's changed in that short period of time, right? That, think about it, you guys. This whole phenomenon has only been in the last decade, this whole thing that we're talking about, you know, with social media and everything. That's not that long, right? So, you know, it's just very interesting, the comparison. But anyway, okay, so. Oh, yeah, that show Cheaters, by the way. Yeah, that was very interesting. All right, so. I am glad that I got to do that topic because the club scene used to be more of something that was part of our life, right? I mean, seriously, even if you were not a big club person in the day, it was still kind of lurking in the background because you knew it was there. Your friends may or may not have gone. Maybe your boyfriends, girlfriends, or spouses were into it and you weren't, right? So I think it's very interesting. Now, forgive me for my cold again, you guys. I know I sound kind of stuffed up, but it's the way it goes. What is this? Well, we have about 15 minutes until the break, but I think I'm going to start talking about, what is this one? This is Russell Brand. Now, you guys, I'm not a big Russell Brand person. I'm really not. But once in a while, a video topic will pop up by him that I find interesting. And he's basically saying this current Hamas / Israel situation or Iran war, and especially Tucker Carlson commenting on it, is worse than what they're telling you. So I find that to be an interesting premise. So I will play some of this like now.
Biden wants to bring America into another war. Well, we'll just vote for someone who doesn't want there to be a continual war everywhere in the world. There are no political parties that don't want that. Hello there, you awakening wonders. Thanks for joining us on our mutual...
Was that a fart? And what is he? Who's he talking to? Russell Brand is a comedian, but I don't know. I know some of his topics can be serious, but anyway.
Voyage that we undertake together where we find new systems, where we finally determine to believe in independent media and independent political movements and recognize that change is necessary and to abandon the narratives of the legacy media and to stand up against Big Pharma and the military industrial complex. One thing you won't be deciding for yourself is whether or not to have a government in the United States of America that is not pro-war, because both the Republicans and Democrats are pro-Middle Eastern war, in particular with Iran. Now, Joe Biden, as you know, is already discussing ground troops in Gaza. And curiously, the idea of ceasefire or peace is now verboten, even to discuss it. Now, if you're a person that is affiliated with Palestine, I imagine you have extremely strong opinions about what's happening there now. And if you're a person with strong affiliations with Israel or Judaism or Islam and Palestine, excuse me, like there's so many ways for you to be personally offended and affected by this. But I would say for the rest of us, perhaps what we could look at is peace, ceasefire, solutions, ways of ending this. Again, I can understand if you are Israeli and you're like, well, we can't possibly because Hamas wants to execute everyone. Or if you're Palestinian, this is unfair, they're carpet bombing. All of those things. How can I, a man from Grays, Essex, England, possibly pontificate on that? But I tell you what we can talk about is whether or not it's best for the West and America in particular to unilaterally fund the perpetuation of wars between Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, you guys, I'm sorry, but mainstream talk radio, which is supposed to be conservative, you know, it is a little bit more leaning towards Zionistic support Israel at all costs narrative, which a lot of us, we're more middle of the road. We are non-interventionists. Many of us are. I know this, okay? So, yeah, no.
Ukraine, potential wars with China, war with Iran. Surely there must be a conversation about what is best for humanity as a whole, for the individual people across various regions. How come these arguments continue to collide and contradict? Why is it that it's impossible to say, wow, man, we should be evolving beyond this whole war state that we appear to be globalizing right now? One person who is not afraid to say the unsayable is, of course, Tucker Carlson, who's advocating for peace and saying that war with Iran would be disastrous. We've said before, war with Iran has been a plan for ages and ages. And do you think sometimes that people that run like weapons manufacturers have a vested interest in selling weapons? And do you think that the new American project, which did state war with Iran was on the agenda, would exploit a situation like the current travesties in that region? Well, yes, they would. Let's have a look at what Tucker Carlson's views on a potential conflict with Iran are and ask why neither political party in the United States of America are willing to advocate for peace.
So what would war with Iran mean? Well, it's hard to know because virtually no one who's talking about it in public is operating from a deep interest in America's interest. Is this good for us or is it not? Former Colonel Douglas McGregor is the CEO of Our Country, Our Choice, and one of the first people we turn to for analysis of events like this because he is interested in what happens to the United States. He joins us now. Doug, thank you for coming on. Do you think that we are moving toward war with Iran?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Oh, no. War. We're going to have another war now. You can't have another war. You ain't finished your last one yet. But I wouldn't let my kids have chocolate the way America want to have wars.
And it looks like the chosen destination is indeed Armageddon.
Ding, ding. Next stop, Armageddon. I wonder, though, people that fiercely advocate for more war, if they ever think in the ultimate war, we all die. Now, I know we all die anyway, and perhaps it doesn't matter if we all die at the same time. Perhaps it might be nicer. But there should be some sort of chat about it, shouldn't there?
I'm sure many of us have thought the same. The best way to leave this planet is with your friends and with less pain. Come on, everybody's thought about this, okay? Right? The human condition is not, doesn't like to die alone, A, doesn't want to die in pain, B, and preferably would rather die painlessly and or painlessly and with those they like. Or love. That's just how it is.
There doesn't seem to be any real appreciation for the implications for us, and frankly, for Europe and the world, as well as the Middle East, of such action. You know, take for an example, just on the economic side, about 20% of the world's oil passes through the Straits of Hormuz every month. Probably 25% of liquefied natural gas. And you're talking about shutting down 2 to 3 million barrels a day of oil from Iran. This entire region is involved in the war. This is not an Iranian monopoly by any stretch of the imagination.
What Colonel Douglas McGregor has just explained is that by going to war with Iran, you jeopardize that entire region, not just oil produced in that particular country, but many natural fuels or fossil fuels, however you describe them, that are produced in that region will be jeopardized. So essentially, you're creating a cluster of conflicts and, I suppose, a massive energy crisis that's likely to affect everybody in Europe and North America. And I suppose there are some things that are simply worth doing that for. But is this worth doing that for? Is that something that we've considered? Is that something you feel that you've had explained plainly to you? The same way that as the Ukraine-Russia conflict was escalating, was it explained to you that it was likely to create an energy crisis? Were you told that the Ukrainian counteroffensive would definitely be successful, even when the government themselves said there's no chance that's going to bloody work? What I'm advocating for myself is a kind of, as best as possible, holistic understanding of why this might happen. And if we, from watching Tucker Carlson and this general, can together conclude that it's likely to have devastating consequences, presume.
Is it me, or does Russell Brand talk super fast? He doesn't do substances anymore, from what I hear. Like, there was one time when he was, I guess, I don't know what he was into, whether it was alcohol or drugs. I don't know. Okay, so obviously they say he's clean now. I'm just saying, I'm not criticizing, but this guy does talk super fast, right? Just noticing.
Presumably, the people that are advocating for the advance of this conflict also understand that, have gamed it out and mapped out, and gone, you know, well, that's going to be good for us, ultimately, because it seems that the last crisis, the pandemic, was beneficial for the most powerful interests in the world. Big tech benefited, big pharma benefited. There's a problem when what a crisis for you, because it's going to cost you a lot of money to put gas in your car, are not crises for them. You can't have decisions made by people who are not affected by the consequences of their decision. That's not democracy.
Then when you look at the military side, you have to look at the arsenal of missiles that Iran possesses. And they can reach out 1,200 miles with great precision, very high explosive conventional warheads that would do enormous damage, destroying whole city blocks in places like Haifa, Tel Aviv, even Jerusalem, though I doubt they would attack Jerusalem. The bottom line is that we need to think this through, and everyone right now is emoting.
Yeah, think this through doesn't seem like the worst idea in the world on the precipice of another crisis, and it does seem like people are emoting. You do see people like Lindsey Graham and Nikki Haley talking about it in bombastic, hyperbolic, emotional terms, which are going to get an emotional response, as we continually say, particularly from people on either side of this devastating, ideological, historic conflict that are emotionally affected. They're obviously not going to be swayed or persuaded by it anyone, I don't imagine. And then the rest of culture seems to be treating this like it's just another one of those things where on Instagram you put a tile up or whatever. But this is...
That's right. Talking about Instagram and social media again, all the way from the demise of the nightclub to the infiltration of war, because you can see your war on Instagram. It's so weird.
This is something that pertains to the potential end of the world. So I feel like if you're not personally invested, you probably have an obligation to advocate for a sensible solution. Or at least, even if you're not, you should say, no, Armageddon. I've fought this through. Massive crisis of energy. Yeah. Displacement of millions of people. Yes. Further tensions between the world's various religious lineages. Fine. Increase of domestic terrorism. Don't care about that either. We're all going to be poor. This is going to legitimize the governments locking us all in our homes again. We're all going to have social credit scores because the migrant crisis will be used to legitimize people having digital IDs and stuff. I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah. That's another bad thing about this, quote, migrant crisis, is digitalizing IDs so they could say who's who. But that's not going to help us, you guys. Just makes things worse.
Many voices are being shut down now because it's considered insensitive to even say, could we always, that song, all we are saying is give peace a chance. Now, you wouldn't be allowed to have that. All we are saying is, that was it. What was the thing? That, we were just saying that bit. Okay, well, the Beatles aren't as good anymore then. We're creating a perpetual crisis and allowing it to affect everybody. At some point, we're going to have to recognize, wait a minute, this is one planet. Infinite space. We're going to have to look at some new models of working this stuff out and not just go with the elite establishment who benefit from perpetual crisis, because otherwise they're going to keep perpetuating crisis. Yep, I've seen it now. Right, okay, we're going to have to balance this stuff out by advocating for alternatives. No, let me know.
There is no thinking anywhere. All of the bases that we have in Iraq and Syria, unfortunately, where we still have over 1,000 Americans, all of those would be targeted, and this time they would target them accurately, and this destruction would be wholesale. I would expect trouble here at home and in the United States because of the open border. Hezbollah has a very large operation in Mexico. There are no doubt many Hezbollah agents inside the United States.
This was a type of language, right? Oh, Hezbollah could be in Mexico. Do you remember when I was younger, they used stuff like that to advocate for a war? That's what they say. We're going to have to go to war.
Here's the thing, you guys. This is not about the pro-Israel Hamas or anti all that. The problem with the open border is, regardless of whether this Middle East thing is happening or not, that's just a disaster regardless, right? Just is.
Or because this terrorist is going to affect us. Now you've got to say stuff like that to not have a war. Listen, don't have a war. Why? Because of terror. There's a war against terror. Peace against terror now. Everything's gone top shelf. Oh, but these people are right wing. These people. I'll tell you what, mate. You might want to put that stuff aside at this point because we're all going to die.
We can only begin to.
He is funny. I did like that. Yeah, these hardcore idiots. I mean, come on, people. I've debated some of these hardcore people, right? And I actually had success with winning the debate. The one woman, which we don't have like really bad words to each other, but I did win the debate and she didn't have anything to say, which means I won because she's the kind of person, if I didn't win this debate, she would have come back at me with a comment, but she didn't. So I won. Yay. So reason sometimes does win at the end of the day.
To imagine the kind of trouble they could cause.
Is it me? Or does the future feel more insecure and uncertain? Wars, pandemics, lies, trickery. My cats keep having kittens. The last one's personal. For those who are in the United States, there is a way to secure your hard-earned nest egg. American Heart Flutter on your first quality.
As is their...
Call 8665 or simply text BRAND to 998899. Get up to $5,000 of silver and protect your future in this crazy, crazy world with some solid precious metals literally made in stars.
The missile and space program in Iran is very, very advanced, as is their cyber warfare capability. All of these things would be brought to bear against us. But what's most important, I think, for Americans to understand is if we attack Iran on the basis of Hezbollah's alleged willingness to attack Israel, if Israel invades Gaza, we will end up in a fight with Russia.
Okay, I'm pausing it there. Yeah, this guy makes sense. I think this is going to be a big lesson for Americans and everybody in the world about what it means to say no to brainwashing, right? Now, music is going to come on at any second. So, yeah. Okay, there it is. This is Noreen Halpin, Wallet at Heart Roundtable Show. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only
on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
You're listening to the Wild at Heart Roundtable with Noreen Helpan, only at Revolution Radio.
Welcome back to Noreen Helpan's Wild at Heart Roundtable Show. I'm going to pick up where I left off because, you know, as you guys know, I have a cold and I can talk, but I don't want to overly use my voice, if you know what I mean. So I'm going to play a little bit more of this video.
Russia will not sit by quietly and watch Iran destroyed by United States air and naval power in the region. And once Russia enters this, it becomes much more than just a local conflict, maybe more than just a regional war.
Now, the weather? I mean, where do you go with that, really? Other than, oh, yeah, this does sound like a relatively reasonable prognosis for how, you know, I've always wondered how I might die. Well, here's how you're going to die. These are responsible decisions. And the question you might want to ask yourself is not the kind of questions They're quite complex, ideological, sometimes theological, the complex historic regional disputes that have defined the Middle East. All of those things are, you know, seem irresolvable, certainly to my tiny little mind. But what you can say with some degree of certainty is the people that claim to represent you and your interests do not represent you and your interests. They represent the military industrial complex and their interests, and probably sets of interests that are too diffuse and ethereal for me to even identify and understand, because I don't think those kind of interests are plainly visible to us. So do you think that it would be good if somewhere in the conversation these kind of views were being espoused? And beyond that, somewhere within the electoral process, you were invited to participate. For example, right, say you went, no, I really believe in this because I'm Israeli, or I'm really against this because my family are in Gaza. I'd say, oh God, yeah, I'll shut up if you want. Like, you know, like, I wouldn't try and have those arguments with you. But for people that are just looking at, oh, I live in Wyoming, or I live in Dusseldorf, or whatever. We're talking about world war. We're talking about world war. And we've already seen that global crisis equates to benefits for the most powerful interests in the world. How many times do we have to recite Julian Assange's edict? The function is to take public money, put it into private hands, legitimize war. We can't just say we're doing this war because of like stuff that seems pretty malfeasant. No, we're doing this to protect these people because this awful thing, that awful thing. What choice do we have? We have to do it. America is the, sort of somehow the policeman of the world. Well, they're a corrupt policeman, and it's a policeman that's not operating on behalf of the community. It's a policeman that's...
Yes, hello, you guys. He said something important. Me, like many of you, we are patriotic Americans who love this country, but our government, like many governments, are not to be trusted. They haven't been for a while, and especially now, no. So I'm on board with him on that.
Operating on behalf of the interests of the powerful, which is the complaints that people have about ordinary policing sometimes, isn't it? Good policing would be, we work for you, the community. How can we protect you and make sure that a law that's there to protect you, is observed? A bad policing would be, we're going to crush your dissent in favour of the agenda of the establishment. If you don't have any values or principles, you're just awash in a maelstrom. Because most of us are exhausted. I know many of you out there struggling between food and fuel. Another winter's upon us. Another mad pandemic could be launched at any time. Curious, bizarre decisions to be made. It's very difficult to engage these kind of subjects. So easy to go for the emotional response. I'm on this side, I'm on that side, I'll post these kind of things. But I feel like we might need to look for a third way. This is Daniel R. DePetris, who's a fellow at Defense Priorities. As bad as the war between Israel and Hamas is, it could get even worse if the fighting expanded. Some US politicians and pundits are perfectly fine with the prospect and even recommended that the Biden administration take the fight directly to Iran, Hamas's main external backer. Senator Lindsey Graham, an arch Iran hawk, has used several television appearances to press for war against Iran. On October the 15th, the senator stated the US should knock Iran out of the oil business if Hezbollah, its proxy in southern Lebanon, entered the conflict. Pundits are wholly unaccountable and have the luxury of not worrying about the consequences of their recommendations. Policymakers, in contrast, have weighty responsibility on their shoulders and need to closely weigh the costs and benefits of every plausible scenario. And I suppose here it becomes...
As I said before, while this stuff goes on, we're not the only country in this situation, but the United States, for example, in a big way, is being completely, like, destroyed. While this narrative is going on, this is what pisses me off.
Relevant and important to note that it's our firm belief that those policymakers do not represent you. They represent another set of interests and have to create rhetorical veils to prevent us going, hey, you don't represent us. You're just going to do stuff that's convenient for your backers. That's why you invest in weapons companies on the precipice of war. That's why you accept donations. That's why you turn up at these dinners. That's why lobbying and donations aren't all banned. So because we're not thinking in those terms for some strange reason, we allow policies to be made that are at odds with the interests of most of us. First, we should be clear about one thing. Just because Tehran is a sponsor of Hamas, it doesn't necessarily mean it was operationally involved in the terror group's rampage in Israel. This isn't about making any excuses for Iran, who after all is the world's preeminent state sponsor of terrorism, but rather to point out a simple fact. Secretary of State and...
Yeah, you guys, come on. The involvement of Iran in all this is not simple. And the pro... Zionist types are making it like it is, but it's not, right? So whatever. I mean, come on.
Anthony Blinken publicly stated, "We don't have any direct evidence that Iran was involved in the attack, either in planning it or carrying it out. Israeli intelligence concurred with this judgment." Weapons of mass destruction, part two. Of course, the terrorist attack is appalling. Everybody knows that. The same way as 9/11 was appalling. Everybody knows that. I suppose what we're discussing is whether or not to go to Iran or Iraq, or what the subsequent reaction to it, particularly by people that aren't directly involved, nations indeed that aren't directly involved, might do to contribute to making this conflict far, far worse. Certainly these are questions that require looking at. One would think, or at least hope, the US wouldn't take the country to war on incomplete or contradictory intelligence. After all, the US did exactly that in Iraq 2 decades ago, and the result was an unmitigated disaster for US power, influence, and credibility. Some, like John Bolton, former President Donald Trump's national security advisor, have long advocated for the use of US military force against Tehran and used every opportunity to buttress their argument for military action. It's telling, however, that these same proponents failed to seriously consider the costs attached to such an operation. And the costs are so exceedingly high that whatever benefits may arise out of a military campaign are practically irrelevant. Any attack against Iran would turn the 30,000 US troops stationed throughout the Middle East into prime targets for an Iranian reprisal. We know this because American troops have been targeted by the Iranians before, not only through proxies in Iraq and Syria, but directly. The roughly 3,500 US troops in Iraq and Syria would be sitting ducks, having to dodge rocket fire and drone attacks from Iran's proxy network to a greater extent than they already are. American casualties would compel the White House to send even more US military power into the region for force protection purposes, which in turn would provide Iran and the litany of militias under its thumb with even more targets. One can't overstate just how quickly a situation like this could spiral into a fully fledged war between the US and Iran, which both have sought to avoid. And it's been noted that potentially that could include Russia. So it seems that what we have is a sensitive, complex situation that whatever else should be as free from hyperbole and hysteria as is human possible. Israel too would be in for a very difficult period. The IDF is an extremely capable force, yet it's never been tested on two fronts simultaneously. Although the missile attacks and airstrikes between Israel and Hezbollah over the past several days are a concern, those engagements have been limited thus far. It would no longer be the case if US bomber aircraft drop their payloads in Iran. It's inconceivable that Hezbollah would be restrained in such a scenario. This would not only be terrible for Israelis who live in the north, but also for those in Tel Aviv. Hezbollah's missile arsenal can reach Israel's major population centers. Unlike the rocket arsenals of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah's missile capacity includes at least some with precision-guided technology. Casualties in Israel would be immense. Taking the fight to Iran is the last thing US should do. It was a terrible idea when it was proposed in the past, and it's a terrible idea now. And it seems like it's the sort of idea that would only be pursued by people who don't care about Palestinians. Indian lives, Israeli lives, Iranian lives, American lives, British, French, Syrian, Yemeni lives, perhaps even life itself, outside of a very narrow set of parameters and a very narrow set of interests. Whatever such a unipolar and hegemonic perspective is, it is not democracy. It is not advanced. It's not fair and just. It's not likely to lead to a better, more peaceful world. Think how at odds that assessment is with Joe Biden's almost ludicrously jingoistic proclamations on 60 Minutes. We're the United States of America, for crying out loud. We're America.
We're the United States of America.
He did a good Joe Biden. Oh my God. Horrible guy.
God's sake.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but what about the sort of escalation because of the accessibility of these precision missiles?
America?
Those three syllables are not going to be sufficient to help the people of Tel Aviv in the event that Hezbollah target them, which in this analysis becomes a possibility. And the heightened emotions caused by an appalling terror attack and an escalating ground war in a...
But if this is just all false flags, right? Could be...
a region that has been historically more troubled than any that I can even think of. All of these things have to be considered. And to be dismissive of the very idea of peace, or looking for a solution, or not immediately alloying yourself unquestioningly to one side, because one side has historically been oppressed and the other side has been subject to genocide, and there are so many religious reasons that either side can call upon, otherwise this conflict wouldn't be happening, I suppose. That if we allow politicians, policymakers, weapons manufacturers, global hegemonists, the kind of unipolar forces that exploited the pandemic in
in order to create profit and shut down true democracy, if those voices prevail, if there isn't the introduction of nuance, conversation, uncertainty, doubt, inquiry, without those things, without the kind of Sturm und Drang and patriotism and bluster and simplistic online alliances that appear to define almost every issue these days, then the outcome is likely to be global war. It was already worrying that people were not advocating for peace between Ukraine and Russia because it's a situation that would inevitably lead to a nuclear conflict. Finding ways to mesh that together with this far more volatile situation in the Middle East is appalling and ridiculous. I don't think we should be afraid to advocate for peace. And if there are no political parties, if the Democrat Party want war because their interests are the military-industrial complex interests, if the Republican Party want war because their interests are the military-industrial complex's interests, or energy companies, or whatever kind of alliances they have, you know as well as I do, whatever it is they're saying and whatever it is they're doing, it isn't because they're, we love the people of this region, or we love the people of that religion. They don't care about that. You might really care about it. They don't. It's clear from their actions, from the events of the last few years, and the direction of flow of revenue and what kind of people find themselves unpersoned or belmarshed into eternal trialless purgatory. I'm speaking, of course, of Julian Assange. That tells you what the trajectory of power is. And if this happens to align temporarily with your belief system, then I won't judge you. But if you're not personally, religiously, ethnically involved in this conflict, then I would say, and I pray that you agree with me, that we should be looking for ways to avoid the loss of human life, avoid damaging the planet, and avoid our shared and collective future. Because from the most desirable perspective, we do have a shared future. And if we abandon that perspective and just say, no, it's this tribe and that tribe and you're either with us or against us, and even if you just don't ally yourself to one of these perspectives, you're out, then it's over. It's really, really actually over. And then we will have a regionalized, tribalized world because civilization will crumble as a result of escalating conflicts that will ultimately become nuclear, I suppose. I mean, that's certainly one solution and one that perhaps we should be working together to avoid. Can we at least agree on that? But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the chat and the comments? Remember, we stream every day and you can join us for that stream and participate in this conversation and become a member of a community that believes that there's hope for humanity, who believes that there...
Yeah, you guys, I think the last thing you said is true, right? If this world is destroyed, it will be because the elites, you know, they ramped up things with the population, the masses, and so the masses can think on their own, and then we get into trouble. So he's correct about that. Let's see. I'm going to play some of this and then move on to another topic. This is also about, well, it's a little different. This is called the Unholy Alliance, Islam and the Left, Anti-Israel, Not Pro-Palestine. And this is by the New Culture Forum. This is a British podcast. It's really interesting.
Hello and welcome to Newspeak, the New Culture Forum's weekly look at the news agenda. That's dominated by one thing and one thing alone. I think you will agree with me this week. But before we go on to that, just a few things, just a few notices. The first one is that our locals is hugely expanding. I'm pleased to say we were most recently in Leeds. Now we are going to be in Hull. We're in Hull on Tuesday, October the 24th. Tuesday, October the 24th. So if you are in Hull or in the surrounding area, or indeed if you're not and you want to join us, please do come along. The best way to find out details, in fact, the only way, is to email us at locals@newcultureforum.org.uk. So do hope to see you there. They're great events and very excited about them. One other thing, actually, and that is just want to say thank you, because this week we passed 200,000 subscribers to this channel. We went to a conference recently and he's joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for
coming. I mentioned the one subject, but actually when you're talking about what's happening in Israel and Gaza, I think more than any other time in this particular, with this particular issue, it has actually splintered into many issues. Many of the things, in fact, we talk about on the show. But I want to start, therefore, right up to date. We're recording this on the Wednesday.
Conceived notions about all of this, about their pre-existing biases. I think this needs to.
Now, just to illustrate what's going on here, I'm kind of skipping around the introductions, but these are mostly British people on here, except at this little table. But half the people are actually, what do you call it, Middle Eastern or Sikh background, but they're born and raised in Britain, and they are not for all this leftist BS stuff going on in the UK.
There needs to be an inquiry into how this was allowed to get away with, because you even had senior BBC correspondents who are regional experts who were on television in the hours after the bombing, saying that this was highly likely to be an Israeli attack because the size of the fire was, without any evidence to substantiate that, going purely upon their own speculation. And I thought, gosh, this is a time of old when you need to have caution because of the unforeseen consequences from this. And of course, we've seen them now. President Biden is in the region. The meeting that he had planned in Jordan, the summit meeting with other Arab heads of state, has been cancelled because of outrage over this bombing, because they believed it to be Israel. Then again, we've seen the most hateful vitriol being spewed on social media and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. People even like Chris Williamson, the disgraced pro-Palestine Labour MP, who was called for the eradication of the state of Israel on the basis of this allegation by Hamas. Now, it must be said, we still don't know what the cause is. So I'm not saying it definitely was Hamas either. The point is, we don't know. There's more evidence coming in to suggest it was a Hamas misfiring, or not Hamas rather, but a Palestinian misfiring by another organization. But we simply don't know, and cooler heads should prevail. And the whole purpose of the BBC is to provide that coolness of rationality and sober second thought and everything, and they've completely failed on this, and it dishonors journalism.
I mean, there are so many things here in this just one story, as you say, Peter. It fractures and fractures and fractures. I mean,
okay, guys, I'm gonna play another video from this channel, the New Culture Forum, but it's related to, but a little bit, I think, different and better, maybe. Let's see.
And total. Well, decolonization.
Okay, this is about decolonization.
Dark. First things first, I just want to make a comment about the book, is that you cover a huge amount in this, around about 150 pages, my kind of book. Quite often, authors will take 500-600 pages to say what you say. very, very important, particularly as an academic working at the very coalface of what we're talking about. First things first, decolonization. Can you give us a pithy definition? Because we hear it bandied about, and yet at the same time, we're not quite sure what it is.
Well, decolonization refers to the period when you had the dissolution of the European empires. So politically, that was the process of decolonization, i.e. how former colonies basically sort of sought independence through nationalist movements, sometimes communist movements, etc. So that's the formal process of political decolonization. Decolonization, as it appears on our campuses, refers to something that's kind of... I think you could argue would be sort of parasitic on those movements, but it's far more about essentially a critique of Western civilization in the current moment. And it basically says, to cut a long story short, it draws on, and we can go into this if you want to, but it draws on a kind of some elements of Marxism, but primarily postmodern and post-structural and what are called post-colonial theories. And these essentially argue that all knowledge is contingent. There's no such thing as truth or science or objectivity. So all knowledge is contingent, and therefore there's no such thing as truth, and therefore human life is characterized by struggles over truth and meaning.
So does that mean that the colonization that we're talking about, say, for example, at universities, is the colonization by white Western people of concepts like the truth?
Well, so essentially, what the critique that they would make, the decolonizers make, is that Western forms of knowledge, what are called white Eurocentric forms of knowledge, are fundamentally imbued with power relationships.
Yeah, so what happens when the West disappears, right, or is disenfranchised? So all these woke people suddenly have a better life. It's going to be the opposite, you guys. Here's another one about Britain's Black History hoax, also by the New Culture Forum. I love these, like, revisionist attempts at history.
You're watching Deprogrammed. This is the New Culture Forum's latest show, committed to fighting back against the forces of ideological conformity, particularly among the young. My name's Harrison Pitt. I'm a senior editor at the European Conservative, and I'm thrilled to be joined today, as ever, by Evan Riggs, who is a freelance journalist, and our special guest this week, Tom Rousel, an historian and the creator of the popular YouTube channel Survive the Jive. Now, Tom, you went fairly viral last week when you put out a pretty devastating takedown both on YouTube and on Twitter. I think on YouTube it's got about 190,000 views, and on Twitter about over 600,000 views. Pretty devastating takedown of the BBC's Horrible History Sing Song for effectively lying about the genetic history of the British Isles.
Oh my God, I gotta see that video. Where is that video? That is like this hip-hoppy pop, like, video saying that England was black. I'm not kidding you guys. This is where we're at. It's so friggin' bad. Wow. That's crazy. That is nuts. That's crazy.
Students.
Oh my God. I wish I could find that. I will find it. That's crazy. Life in Belarus. Oh, some of my ancestry is from there. These people are crazy. Senator Kennedy, whatever. This is crazy. Homelessness in England, okay, right? Let's see. Immigration without end. Yeah, you guys, this is really a big, big topic in our life, okay? You know, it doesn't hurt to keep repeating it, because, like, the LGBTQ thing, it's a big deal. Let's see. What? Okay, the podcast of Lotus Eaters is another British podcast. It's really good.
So the problem with grass is that there's just too many white people in the grass.
Problem with grass, there's not enough Guardian journalists touching it. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the real issue. In case you're wondering what we're talking about, we'll get it up. This is the article here that's spurred a lot of interest, because what the heck? The English countryside still feels like a white middle-class club. We can and will change this, says Dan.
Dan, if you don't feel welcome somewhere, maybe the reason for that is because you're not.
I don't know why he would feel unwelcome at all. Anyway, we'll get into that in a minute. Well, it's not just...
I think it's just him, though.
It is just him. It is entirely just him. There's just, like, there's white people in the grass. Like, the snow is speaking Finnish, or the trees are speaking Vietnamese. The countryside, the hedgerows are speaking English to me. And he's got mad about that.
Is he looking at the crime rates of the shires and being like, well, this isn't anything like London?
That is one of the complaints. So we'll start off with crime, being, we'll just promote something on LotusEaters.com, which was crime, which is Frank Decotta's The Tragedy of Liberation.
Good. Dan's going to follow the footsteps of Mao and create the new man.
Yes, because you may remember Mao turned up in China and went, this isn't real China. You know what real China is? Everyone's starving to death and murdering each other.
Literally fields of corpses.
Yeah, and Dan has a similar problem where he's gone, God damn it, it's all so peaceful and quaint.
This isn't real England.
I want to have it destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, start off, because there are mock outlets that predicted this. So, I mean, this is a fake Guardian outlet that was made to take the piss out of the Guardian. And in 2020, they published this. Life's up. Why aren't more nature countryside walks being created specifically for the needs of black, Asian, and minority ethnic groups? 3 years
Dan, do you feel silly?
He is actually the joke version of himself. And if we go to some other memes that were made about this, Cecil Road memes came out of the works.
I totally agree with this one.
The African countryside still feels like a black hunter-gatherer club. We can and will change this. Cecil Rhodes. These poor, belated savages are yet to be blessed with the civilizing effects of the Anglo-Saxon race. And blah, 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 as Cecil Rhodes would have written.
Which is basically Dan's position, that these poor, benighted, savage Englishmen have yet to be blessed by the civilizing effects of Jamaicans.
Yeah, I don't know what we're missing from Jamaica, specifically. We've got the recipe, so I mean, that's that argument's up the window.
Yeah, now we've got your food.
I've purchased your cookbook, so now leave, Mr. Jamie Oliver. I mean, to be fair, that is true. I mean, what do you need Jamie Oliver for once you've got the book?
Well, yeah, great question.
So we'll go back to the article, because first things first, Dan over here, literally who?
Literally in Stroud, eh?
but also literally who? Who the hell is Dan?
Someone is about to start terraforming the Shires.
Exactly, but keep that in mind. Where I live, he writes, in Stroud, Gloucestershire, I feel privileged to have a gorgeous view of the valleys out of my bedroom window, stretching as far as the eye can see. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a postcard perfect...
Dan's like, yeah, this has to change.
It's a postcard perfect sea of green that looks just as beautiful in the summer sunshine as it does on a frosty winter's morning.
And why do you hate it?
Why are you upset? What do you... Go enjoy it.
So everything's brilliant. Go for a walk.
But... Oh. comma. As a person of colour...
God.
Living in a rural area, many of the fields I can see feel off-limits to me.
Why?
Those fields are off-limits.
I mean, is there a guard by the gate to these fields? Be like, no blacks. No Irish.
Checking
no
bags to see if you're hiding any black children in them before you can go and touch the grass.
Usually, sir, you have far too much money, and then turn around and go back to where you came from.
Back off with you. You ever see the British Constabulary? They usually wear hoods. not rainbows.
They're not normally out in the countryside, to be honest.
No, I also think there's a new division of countryside keepers, as we call them. A government review in 2019 found that I'm not alone in thinking this. The fields are...
But also, that just indicates there are loads of idiots.
Yeah.
I'm not the only idiot in this country. That's true.
Lots of people who live in the city and don't know what a cow is or seen one. They just know it as beef. They don't think they're allowed in the grass because the white people will get them. I don't know. What is wrong with you? Many black, Asian, and ethnically diverse people, because remember, white people are not diverse, reportedly view the countryside as an exclusive, mainly white, mainly middle-class club. He then presides his reasoning, which is none. I'm not joking.
Yeah, thank you, Idaho Frogbait in chat. Happening by default. Yeah, no, this whole thing is done by purpose. On purpose. Can you imagine 20, 30 years ago or more, LGBTQ curriculum in the school, or mass migrants just flooding and flooding borders of Western countries, all this stuff, okay, wouldn't be happening, right? But it's happening because people are too afraid to say anything about it. Am I right about that? I think I'm right about that.
There is no reasoning.
Right, okay, yeah.
He just says it's the case.
Well, what he's saying is that English people live in the English countryside.
Yeah. And
he doesn't really want to associate with English people. He wants to associate with other migrants.
He wants to live in...
And people, like, who they're talking about are just antagonizers, right? Whether they're paid or not, you know. And somebody in the comment was saying, you don't go to India and ask a question like, why is everybody so brown? Or you don't go to Vietnam and say, gee, everybody's speaking Vietnamese. Like, really? So why can you go to England and say, there's too many British in England? It's the same BS.
London, with fields. Which...
Sorry, you can move to whatever country you came from or your parents came from.
His grandparents are from Jamaica.
Well, there we go.
So, I mean, he could I think there are field ginger bats.
I imagine there are.
It might be the surface of Mars. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be a blasted, desolate wasteland in the Caribbean.
In an attempt to challenge this perspective of the countryside in an exclusively white area, the Independent Cinema Office and the Lux Arts Agency have commissioned a program called Right of Way to show alongside archival shots exploring the history of the natural trails. He's talking about archival shots of black people in the countryside, in case you're wondering. There is some, like, 1950s footage of a black family once having a picnic.
Amazing.
And they're like, oh, look what we found.
Proof that England has always been diverse.
Yeah, nah. But it's a really weird obsession, obviously. However, himself, my film, Black Strangers, which I'm sure is going to be insightful and not just...
I can't wait to watch it.
Complete sludge. Yeah. Follows my attempts to search for an 18th century namesake of mine, a mononymous Daniel, who was buried in a nearby Nymphsfield on 31st of December 1719 and was described in records held in Gloucestershire archives as being simply a black stranger.
Really? So 300 years ago, there was a black man in Gloucestershire for some reason.
Maybe.
And I, someone who has nothing to connect me with him other than the colour of my skin.
Except he's barely even black.
Except he's obviously, yeah, barely even black. I'm going to go and dig up his bones and say, brother.
No more brother war.
What? You've got no connection to this man.
So he's also made a film whining about how the countryside is white. Right. The reason he's done that is...
Do you know what the problem with England is, Callum? Too many English.
Yeah, he doesn't explain his reasoning either for that one.
But that's because that's what that is.
That's just it.
Yeah.
Never explained, actually. I made the film in the aftermath of my involvement in the council-led consultation in Stroud.
Ah.
I assume it was a debate in Stroud about to kill all the black people, to focus your efforts on the racial divide of Stroud.
I actually know what they're talking about here. It kind of is, actually.
Not really.
It kind of is. There are too many black people represented in Stroud, and we need to start removing some of that representation.
You're quite right. And Dan here was leading that charge.
Maybe we should start listening to Dan.
He was asking the people of Stroud about the Black Valois clock. Stroud's consultation drew media attention from outlets across the political spectrum and ignited a culture war debate.
Now, I think this is interesting because I looked into this because there are a lot of pubs and stuff called the Black Boy and stuff like this. And everyone's like, but that's got nothing to do with an African because it was
King Charles.
It was at the first, I think it was, with black hair. And so he was called the Black Boy, because it turns out that other things than skin can be black.
I mean, in this case, it actually was a replica of a black boy.
But yeah, actually, in this case, it is what we could call black representation.
Yeah, but this is all this individual is, Dan over here. He's just a local whiner. And if we go to the next link here, we can see how local...
local man whines in The Guardian.
But no, seriously.
I know.
He has no other publications in The Guardian. The Stroud Greens are sharing his thing. I happen to know this, doing my research, and it's like... Yeah, interesting. I wonder which party he belongs to and spends his time whining with. Who knows? He's also a local pronoun user.
Of course
he is. He's a pronoun fan.
Pronoun aficionado.
We go to his Instagram. You can see that. He, him.
In case I couldn't have guessed that.
And as you can see, he then has the black boy there. That's his only accomplishment in life. He once saw black representation and went, none of that. That is his...
I just don't understand why we have to take down every representation of a black person in England.
I don't know if there's a higher picture for people to see, but if you scroll, maybe you'll find it. There's the black boy there. In case you're wondering, it's a sculpture that was made in the 1700s of a black person with a spear, who is obviously tribal because it's the 1700s. They had not quite got to Wakanda in... West Africa.
Well,
we
talked about this, and they still didn't have the wheel, did they?
Well, these days they have spaceships. I've seen on Hollywood, so it's quite a thing has changed. But you might have noticed that he's got a spear, and I'm harking on that because he keeps claiming this individual that it's a representation of slavery. Slaves don't have spears.
Yeah, no, that's a representation of the person who captured the slaves.
Yeah, that's a representation of a slaver, a hard-working black man with a high-paying job. He was a crown in his community. Provided for his family by stealing other families. But that's the reality of history. Anyway, it was someone put that up in the local town to be like, hey, isn't this neat? There you are.
No, I'm kind of on board with taking down the statue of a slaver now.
Yeah, well, I stand with this chap. So we go to his website, Dan's, just to check out more about this individual. How do you get some piece of crap published in the article like that? Where you're just like, oh, you know what the problem is? White people. Get rid of them. Good. Oh. Give them an article.
How do you get that published in The Guardian?
Yeah, how do
That's
you...
That's practically everything they publish.
But let's check out just this person's
back. Even tangentially.
Background. Because I did. And this is his own website where he just jacked himself off.
Well, obviously, it's his own website.
Yeah.
Their lingo is hilarious, you guys. Yeah, it's funny.
Well, it's like the wankiest thing on earth. Okay. Quote, the new commissions interrupt and challenge the enduring perception of the rural idyllic as an untouched and unchanging space where time stands still.
Nobody thinks that.
They're talking about the countryside as a beautiful, wonderful place.
Yeah, but nobody thinks that the English countryside has been locked in some sort of primordial stasis. Like, well, the reason it's covered in hedgerows is because it's constantly been used.
Yeah. What happens when black, Asian, and other ethnically diverse people enter the landscapes?
Oh.
You know, isn't it ironic that the United States has been accused of these things even before the UK? Because we are an actual newer, quote, immigrant, quote, country. The UK is an older country, is not an immigrant country, and yet they're trying to turn it into the US. It's so weird. So weird.
Oh, God, why does everyone else have to be ethnic rather than us?
I also love the idea that it's like, it's almost like a white nationalist talking, where they're like, what happens if I put a black here? Well, the whole thing will fall apart, maybe. I don't know. Let's find out. It's like, what?
Black, Asian, and Asian isn't an ethnicity.
No.
Like, Asian is a massive continent filled with billions.
You guys, in the UK, as you might know, Asian refers generally to people of India, Pakistan, and that region. And they still call Chinese, Koreans, and Japanese to be Orientals. Here, the Orientals are the Asians, and the Indian and Paki people are just called Indians. That's how it is here.
As a people?
I mean, black or white, neither of those are ethnicities.
No, black isn't an ethnicity either.
But the only ethnic diverse people...
At least black isn't a location.
See, whites can't be ethnically diverse, even though there's, like, what, I think about 200 ethnicities in Europe?
There are loads of ethnicities in Europe, and I don't want any of them wandering around the English countryside either.
You really? You don't want the...
No, I don't want the Germans bloody wandering around. They've got their own countryside.
No.
Enjoy.
Anyway.
Go back to Albania.
Well, he asks, what will happen if I put one of those blacks in the neighbourhood? Which is a really weird thing for Dan to ask.
Just average Friday afternoon.
How can our natural spaces be homes to protest, trespassing, activism, and raves?
Oh, God, no. I don't want any of that in the countryside.
But also he's like...
Yeah, just turn the countryside into a, quote, nightclub, which is what I started this show off talking about, the evolvement of nightclubs.
You know what will happen if we put brown people? There'll be protest trespass. Oh, for fuck. I can't.
There'll be crimes. Oh, really, Dan?
This is his own writing.
Yeah.
We'll go to...
I don't want any of that in the country. I just want to go for a nice walk.
How does this person live writing such crap? Well, he gets money from the box here, which is someplace. They have an article on him talking about how wonderful he is. Mr. Dan over here, he got a bursary. Supported a...
Dan Guthrie... This woke writer is probably a Soros-funded individual. Haha.
New Moving Image Project.
Yeah, so he's essentially like state-funded, basically.
But also, he's making a movie, a Moving Image Project, is what they call it.
Yeah, okay.
Film, like it's 1910. He's in the pictures, you see.
I kind of approve of the antiquated language.
Yeah. It investigates historical and contemporary black presences in Stroud. like they're ghosts. it's an urban legend.
I mean, it probably is in Stroud, but why?
Who wrote this crap?
To what end?
Dan used his bursary to purchase some equipment and software that helped him improve his audio production skills. He developed a generative soundscape for an installation which draws on the unease that comes from being visible as a minority in a predominantly white area of the English countryside. I mean, that's a lot of words to just say he wasted money. We scroll down.
No, it's a lot of words saying, yeah, I kind of don't like white people.
Mm. You notice the funders at the very bottom there, Plymouth Arts Council being anyone. You've got the National Lottery, which is run by government.
Yeah.
You also have Plymouth Council, fantastic.
What I love about Dan is literally the only notable thing about him is that he's black.
Yes.
That's literally all the... Look, I want to talk about how I'm not got the same skin tone as the other people I live around. So, yeah, but why?
And also, someone else who isn't me did a thing.
Yeah.
And I don't like...
Yes, I'm going to say something. It's separate from this topic here. What is going on energetically where I'm noticing that my friends are still my friends. That hasn't ended. But I'm noticing people are talking and messaging a little bit less in the last week, right? I think it's something in the air. Seriously, like something's going to happen. I know we always say that, but then we had COVID, right? I don't know. Something's going on politically or socially. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there is that. But like, who cares about that, Dan?
But again, it's you've done zero with your life. You sit and whine. If you go to the next one here, we can see.
Yeah, except this loser is probably paid by George Soros. You see, that's the problem.
More of like who funds them. The Box here, in case you wondering who the hell they were. It's a £46 million cultural destination, proudly led by Plymouth Council.
Plymouth Council are funding a black guy in Stroud.
To be black, to be and black. That's it. That's his output. Although it's not a surprise, they list our values, progressive. They have equality, diversity, inclusion statements and confessions. Anti-racism party mantras at the bottom as well. About how they're totally anti-racist. Anyway, it's all tax money, is my point.
Yes.
Fundamentally. We go forward because we also have the University of Plymouth, who are very proud to have such works as Black Man. is literally all this is. This is Dan's work, I think, at the University of Plymouth. Do you think he did something else than this one thing for his university projects?
I don't know. What is this one thing?
Whining again about the black boy statue. That's it. Again, literally nothing.
Can't have black representation in Stroud. I agree, Dan. Yeah. Get rid of it.
If we go to the installation, just to see what the hell they're whining about. I mean, this is Dan's work here, is he took some footage that someone else took of the black boy statue and then got some footage of when he was 4 years old and also a black boy.
Yeah.
Oh, please. This is a joke.
Okay.
And put them next to each other.
Okay.
Isn't this stunning, Carl?
I mean, what...
Isn't this moving?
Well, I don't really understand what his problem is, to be honest. And I'm actually going to take him seriously for a minute. Because this doesn't seem... The statue itself doesn't seem degrading.
No, it isn't.
Like, it doesn't seem like it's like, you know, an insult. He hasn't got a collar around his neck. He's not on his knees.
No.
He like, bangs a bell.
The guy that made this in the 1700s wasn't mocking black people.
Yeah.
It was actually like, oh, they look different. So let's draw one of them.
Isn't this something interesting and different and foreign?
No.
These woke people could be triggered by literally anything. They should just go into like a leper colony on an island and just get away from everybody.
No, they can't have those things anymore. Can't have anything nice. We'll have a look at him himself. Okay. Because the thing is, he's a boy. He's not really achieved anything. He's regardless of how old he is, remains a boy. Just whining about statues and at the same time being given money and attention from pathetic state propaganda machines.
Okay, so here's a quick question. If you don't really like living around white English people, why don't you go somewhere where you do like the colour of the skin of the people that you're living around?
Don't know.
Hmm.
Who knows? And if we go to the next stuff here, because the thing is, like, this guy, he's given a national newspaper and is, proved a couple of things, which is mostly these articles are pointless. Number two, because it's literally just an outlet for him to whine, but that's what The Guardian pays for. But the second thing is that this happens all the time in left-wing media, and it's kind of annoying that the rightist media doesn't do that, because it...
Pretty soon, we're not going to feel at home inside our houses or apartments, right? It's going to get that weird. That's their goal. Seriously.
It's literally like left-wing bait you can make, and it has no effect. Mm. Like the left will whine. It'll have no actual effect on your bottom line.
Oh,
like Telegraph or the Daily Mail. They could do that.
Well, yeah.
But they just don't because it's pathetic. But I suppose in the meantime, we'll all get to enjoy more memes, such as Sutter Road memes. But now for some real news, such as local Tunisian man, who I don't know if we can play this from the start because it's some actual racism in the world, which is really weird.
وأخلاقهم تصلح بهم في إفريقيا مصلحش بهم في تونس رأي.
كيفش أخلاقهم؟
ها؟
كيفش أخلاقهم؟
أخلاقهم مش أخلاقنا متاع المغرب العرب أخلاقهم خاصة بهم هم.
تعرف منهم شكون هكا شفت؟
نعم.
تعرف منهم شكون؟
Okay guys, this has got subtitles, so I'm assuming this is in England, okay? But these are Arabic speaking people and there are subtitles, so I'm going to speed it up a little.
There's for people listening, it's a Tunisian man being interviewed by Tunisian media. He's saying, oh, black people don't have the same values as us. She's like, well, have you met any? Trying to, like, more grandstand on him. And he's like, my grandfather used to buy and sell them. What do you mean, have I met any? Oh, but there we are. There's something you could actually speak about. And frankly, I want to hear what that guy's got to say in an article.
I want to hear what Dan's got to say about that guy.
Yeah.
Come on, Dan. You know, we're talking about your fellow non-whites.
The non-white race.
Yeah, the non-white, yeah, the non-white, you know, coalition or union that you're part of. You know, do you want that guy wandering around the Stroud countryside with you? Is that a no, Dan?
I think he would probably, he'd walk up to the statue and be like, my brother. Like,
no, it is that funny, seriously.
Slavers in slavery pride, no. What am I saying? I don't know where I was going. But anyway.
Tunisian guy's like, hey, one's escaped.
No, because they're both slavers, because the guy with the statue.
Yeah, I know, but Dan isn't.
No, that's a whole other conversation to be had. But
yeah.
Anyway, my point being, when you can do research into people on the media, you do have more fun with like realizing what's funny because it's just stupid as well. Like I was sat with my brother the other day and he's watching some football show and they've got flags and signs everywhere about don't be racist, racism bad.
Seriously, it's just too much, man.
Black Lives Matter. And it's you know, I'm looking at that thinking, what a waste of time.
Can I get a Tunisian opinion on that?
But then my brother was looking at it and he just went, why am I watching this crap? I know more about football than these nonsense. And changed it. And I was
great
like,
point.
Yeah, it's great. And a lot of the people you see on, you know, legacy media such as The Guardian or TV is just like, yeah, these people are actual morons.
I hate to say, but Dan did look fairly mediocre.
Yes.
Like,
well, he's not done anything, so no. I think it's an accurate assessment.
I mean, none of the thoughts that he was putting down in that article seemed to be original to him.
But he couldn't even explain his reasoning. It was literally just, it's bad, am I right?
Isn't it bad to be surrounded by people who aren't the same colour of you? It's like, not in my opinion, Dan, but that's because that would be illegal. Some kind of hate crime.
I don't know what's the demographics of Jamaica, but presumably also.
Remember, you guys, the title, I don't think I said it. The title of this video is Problem with Grass is Too Many White People. I'm not kidding.
They're too white. If you appreciated that segment from the.
Okay, it's done. And let me see here. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left of the show. Sorry about my cold, you guys. I want to thank everybody for listening and people in chat too. Let me turn on this Dan Guthrie weirdo. Let's see.
My name is Dan Guthrie, and
this is that woke weirdo that they were talking about. Seriously.
My give and take over commission at Arts University of Plymouth is called IC3GL5. My commission sits alongside Whom Emoji's work in the gallery. I'm taking over the adjacent Plymouth Art Cinema. Both of our works sort of look at statues in different ways. Mine is about an object.
Yeah, he was criticizing this statue. Whatever, I wasn't sure.
Object in my hometown of Stroud called the Black Boy Clock, and it's about responding to the media attention that came alongside it and that focused on me partly as a result of me being part of a council-led review panel. So in June 2021, Stroud District Council launched this consultation asking for, amongst other things, people's opinions of an object called the Black Boy Clock, which was made in the transatlantic slave trade in 1774. And
that's right. It's part of history, you idiot. Leave it alone.
Stood on display today. I have quite a unique relationship to the clock because it's on the same street as my primary school. I walk past on the way there, I walk past on the way to secondary school, and I still walk past it today. In the end, the consultation.
So what?
Got about 1,600 responses, which is quite a lot, and also gathered national attention from media outlets such as The Guardian, the BBC, the Daily Mail. Everyone was sort of obsessed with it for about a weekend, but obviously that had quite a long-term effect. April 2022, me and my fellow review panel members presented our recommendations to the council, one of which is to remove the clock and...
See what I mean? I knew he was up to no good. What a jerk. Excuse me, dude. That is part of history. Leave it alone. What? These people are selfish beyond belief. That's right. And these are selfish people doing this, Idaho Frogbait. These are selfish people doing this, okay? Trying to play the victim card and being selfish. I should, you know what? I don't need the money that bad, but if I did, I think I would do that. But then I would donate half my money to real causes, okay, for real Americans. But I might play the victim card just for fun and make money and go, okay, I made my money. Here you go. Here's the people that really need it. Whatever. Whatever.
Take it to the museum. This was voted through by the council at the end of April.
It is entirely possible that they hired this Dan Guthrie to do this. In other words, the idea was already out there with the elites already floating around, and they needed a person of color who's British to as a plant to pull this through. It's possible. I don't know if this is his original idea, but it doesn't matter. It's bad.
So the ball's sort of in their court now. I think also with these sort of consultations, it's very hard to predict how they'll go. This one certainly got a lot of media attention. I sort of found myself at like the center of this like whirlpool of everything that was quite consuming in a way. I think these works I've made are sort of part of me figuring it all out in retrospect.
Okay, let's just go to Asia or Africa as whatever your race is. Okay, go there and say, you know what? Is that a statue of Confucius? Well, that guy was weird. Let's take it down. Right? Or go to Africa and they have some kind of monument of some African warrior. No, this warrior actually was responsible for the death of thousands of people in the other tribe. I think we should take it down. You guys, that's what's happening here, and it's wrong!
So the installation comprises of several different elements. There's a two-channel video and soundscape. There's a 3D rendering. There's a table of documents, and there's...
I think this guy's too obsessed with this statue. God.
There's also an LED sign that all sort of come together to form this one body of work. In the space forming sort of, well, I guess, someone called it an altarpiece, but I guess sort of on the table, we have all these documents sort of relating to...
See, the left... The left will think we are too mean. No, we're too nice. That's why all this BS is going on in the world.
The research I've done about the clock, there's a sort of index of every article written from, you know, the 1800s to the present day. There's copies of council reports. There's this document that has all of the responses to one of the council questions, which was, what do you think should happen to the clock? Yeah, 1,600 responses, about 99 pages. It's a bit overwhelming, but sort of intentionally on purpose. Core of the work is
Okay, we got a minute to go for the show. Just if you weren't sure what was going on, this woke shill or whatever he is trying to attack this. It's a statue. It's a small statue of a little black boy made in the 1700s. Okay, I'm not sure of the full history of it, but just because it's black and it's whatever, now it's like, oh God, we got to take it down. You don't destroy history. I talked about Robert E. Lee's statue already last week. And then I just happened to run into this story tonight. So this is happening in too many places for me, and I'm sure for you too.
A installation called Automatic Exercises, which is these two videos. One is a short clip of the clock in situ and the statue, and the other is footage of me aged 4.
Oh, God, that's totally narcissistic. Ugh. That picture of him. Okay, this is Noreen Hilpin, Wild at Heart, Roundtable Show. See you guys next week. Take care.
Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Listen up now.
To the corner with Control 0XE 051.